Welcome everyone to the Top Producer Podcast. This is Paul Neifer, your host, and today we're going to have a conversation with Kelly Garrett, who farms and has multiple other businesses located in Western Iowa. So Kelly, how are things going?
Really good, Paul. How are you today?
It's funny, we're taping this on March 21st, and last week here in, I live in the suburb of Denver, Colorado called Parker, and at our house between Wednesday night and Friday morning, we had over 30 inches of snow. So, but now I'm looking outside and we got a little bit of snow on the ground, but not too bad. So that is the nice thing about the Front Range of Colorado. You get a lot of snow and then about a week later it melts away. So we're doing good. How's the weather in your part of the country? I know Eastern Iowa, which is where I have some farmland, has been dry. I know there's supposed to be a storm coming here next week, but how are you looking as far as getting ready for spring planting and so on?
It's not as dry as it was last year, but I definitely wouldn't say that it's wet. And yeah, we're expecting a storm here Sunday, Monday. You know, some of the forecasts are calling for rain. Some of the forecasts are even calling for up to a foot of snow. We're just getting into the full swing of calving with the cow herd. I really don't, you know, if it was rain, it would be fine. A foot of snow doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Snow just creates work.
Yeah.
But I like to go to Colorado with the family and go skiing, but snow here isn't something that I am necessarily fond of.
Well, and Kelly, when I do these podcasts, I always like to start off with your background. And also just for the, listeners out there, Kelly was a Top Producer of the Year candidate this year. And we had our dinner in Kansas City, and that went well. So let's go ahead and start with your background.
You bet. Well, like you said, my name is Kelly Garrett. Farm here in Western Iowa. I'm about 70 miles northeast of Omaha. My mom and dad are 70, 71 now. You know, they're just in the midst of turning 71. And Gene and Kathy, my wife is Amber. Two of my sons, Connor and Kale, are on the farm with us full time. We farm about 7,000 acres. I'm generation number six here. We started in 1881. You know, we're proud of that. You know, so like I said, we farm 7,000 acres, primarily corn. There are some soybeans. There's a little bit of winter wheat that we move around for some soil health advantages of putting that third crop in. And then we love the wheat straw. And then we also have we've expanded the herd. We're up to about 600 cows now in our beef cow herd. And so those winter wheat acres, we take the wheat off. That's some late season pasture then to put the cows on if the pasture is growing short, things like that. We also have Garrett Trucking and KSX Transportation, another trucking company that we're the majority owner in. You know, Garrett Trucking started just as a LLC because of hauling the grain. And then we started doing some commercial trucking. That started to expand. Then with a partner, we started KSX Transportation. And what we primarily do there is we work for a company out of Des Moines named Feed Energy. Feed Energy takes the byproduct from a soybean plant. That byproduct is called soap stock. Soap stock is still 10% soy oil and 10% solids. We truck that product for Feed Energy from, say, Bungie, south of Council Bluffs. We truck that into Feed Energy in Des Moines and Sioux City, and they're what's called an acidulator. And this is oversimplifying the process, Paul, but they put sulfuric acid with the soap stock. They heat it up to 200 degrees, and then it'll separate. And when it separates, they can take that oil off, and they make liquid feed for poultry and hogs. They take out the solids, they call that MGR. That is a high fat ingredient into a fat cattle ration. And really those two products, those two 10% segments of the soap stock is all that they want. And then the other 80% to them is a wastewater. The agronomist that I started KSX Transportation with, he had knowledge of this product. We call it plant food. 400 gallons of plant food has $150 equivalent synthetic fertility value. Hmm. So then Feed Energy allows us to bring the plant food home, and we store it in lagoons here around Western Iowa. and then we spray it. We apply it at a rate of 400 gallons per acre to our 7,000 acres and about 40,000 custom application acres. And we do that to replace the fertility. We're doing it at a reduced rate because it is a byproduct, but there's about 22 million gallons available, Paul. We take it all. So there's roughly enough for about 50,000 acres. And so that's what we're covering. That business has actually become bigger than the farm. That's something we created on our own. It's something I'm very proud of. In all told, we have across every entity, Paul, we have about 83 employees, and the majority of them are in Garrett Trucking and KSX. We're running 50 trucks on a daily basis to keep up with that.
Well, and one of the issues that you have with trucking is, yes, you can deliver a load, but then you come back empty. And in a way, you've sort of solved that issue, haven't you? Because you're delivering the product to the land, to the plant. And I'm guessing you're bringing that liquid back to put it into the lagoon. Is that how you're working that?
Absolutely. You're right on track. Feed Energy pays us to haul the soap stock into them, and then we're bringing the plant food home on the backhaul. So, you're a CPA. Obviously, nothing is free, but that backhaul is a pretty advantageous thing to us from a trucking perspective. Very much reduces the cost, things like that. And that is a great business. The biggest yield limiting factor that we have here in Western Iowa in these hills is we have too much calcium, and that would be the metric of that would be, your base saturation. Perfectly balanced soil is 65% calcium. There's places here we have 90. Mm-hmm. And the sulfur that's in the plant food helps us amend that. And we see great yield advantages. Plus, we see great yield advantages from the amendment. Plus, the fertility is less expensive. So it's a sought after product for us.
How do you apply that? Is that with just a regular sprayer, or do you have a special, some type of special equipment to apply that to the ground?
It's a little bit custom made, a little bit normal. We use hog manure applicators, but instead of incorporating it, we spray it. So we have booms that our guys in the shop make themselves. So there's 70-foot spray booms welded onto these hog manure applicators. But then, one of the challenges of plant food, not only is the volume that we deal with, but it's the acidity. The pH is about 1.5. Ooh. Because of that sulfuric acid. So everything we have custom made, everything is either stainless or plastic, because the joke is that if you just have black iron, it makes everything religious. It becomes very holy if we don't have stainless and plastic on that. And that, so we have become very, I'm not, but the guys in the shop have become very good at being stainless steel welders and fabricators, because a lot of the stuff we make ourselves. But the base machine is a hog manure application. We have a Noon and a couple Hooley wagons that we use.
Okay. Now, is that a little thicker? Is it a little thicker than water, or what's the consistency of that stuff when it's actually going?
I would say it's between molasses and coffee. So it's a little bit thicker than water, but not much. It's very, the viscosity would be very high. It would run very much like water.
Okay. Well, I didn't know we'd start out with that, but it is, I always enjoy these podcasts because I can always zig a little bit off of my little script. So now, did you go to college, or did you come back to the farm right away? I'm just curious on your early part to the start of your career.
I graduated high school in 1993, and I very much was ready to go to Iowa State, and I thought I would end up in a bank or on the board of trade. And, coming out of the 80s, things like that, and the farm crisis, I didn't know that there'd be room for me on the farm with my dad and my uncle. And I just didn't know that was going to be even an available option, or if it was going to be a good option. And I was prepared to go do that. And after being in college for 3 semesters, Paul, I didn't like being indoors. it was not, I think I had about a C average. I had about a 2.3 or 2.4 GPA because I wasn't applying myself. I was working construction on the side. And after 3 semesters at Iowa State, I quit. I dropped out. I worked construction full time. I stayed in Ames because Amber, Amber and I were dating at the time, but it was pretty serious.
Yeah.
And as serious as you can be as a 19 or 20 year old.
Yeah.
And I stayed in Ames for 5 years until she graduated college because she was a grade behind me. Amber went to Iowa State with the idea that she was going to go into law school. She was a full scholarship athlete at Iowa State to run cross country and track. So I stayed in Ames for 5 years until she graduated. She decided that the law school isn't something she wanted to do. And I proposed right before her senior year of college, but there was a caveat that I was coming home to farm because the opportunity had come up. And luckily she said yes. And so she graduated college in the spring of 98 and we moved home to farm.
Well, good, good, good. Yeah, those, yeah, somehow, you know, we learned right away that even though we think as guys we're in control, but really not. So, you know, that's, yeah, we know who was in control of that situation. So,
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I am. There's not very, very many people I have to answer to, Paul, but she would definitely be at the top of the list.
Yeah. Now, how big was the farm operation at that point in time? And how is it, has it grown sort of on a linear, or has it been steps and ups and downs and so on? I'm just curious how that trajectory looks.
You know, when we moved home to farm there in the spring of 98, Dad and Kevin and I together rented about another 550 acres, and that put the total of the farm up to about 2,100 acres, and we had 360 cows at that time. Amber and I were a third partners in the row crop, and then we owned 35 of the 360 cows. And the farm, you know, it was a step process, things like that. You pick up, this is what I tell my sons, you're going to go a while and you're going to think you're never going to get the opportunity to expand. You're going to feel like it's never going to come. And then all of a sudden it comes in bunches and you wonder how you're going to handle it all, but you'll grow into it. And then the process repeats itself that you feel like you're never going to grow again. In the third year of my farming career, my uncle retired, and then it was my dad and I, and we became 50-50 partners at that point. So, you know, that would have been 01. Dad and I were 50-50 partners, and starting then, and we took a big leap from about 2,200 acres up to 3,500 acres in 05. And, you know, and then it was a little bit of a steady incline then, at different times. And, you know, like I said, the total now is about 7,000.
And so you had Garrett Trucking sort of just to haul your grain. And then how did the KSX transportation, I mean, you touched on that briefly, but how did that actually evolve, or how did that get started?
So we hired our first employee in 05 when the farm took that big jump. We leased a sprayer. You know, we were having all of the chemicals, herbicides, custom applied. And the employee for the co-op that was doing that, we were happy with the job. Well, he left to take a different job. And then we felt like the quality of our experience went downhill. And the new job that Randy took, he wasn't happy with, and he was actually living in a house on one of the farms that we owned. So we knew him very well. And so then in 05, we bought our first semi, leased our first sprayer. That was the year I turned 30. So I was 29 years old, bought a semi, leased a sprayer. I was nervous how I was going to pay for it all, but it turned out, you know, the savings on the chemicals alone paid the sprayer lease and paid Randy's wages for the whole year. So it turned out to be a great deal. And so that's when we started in with the semi business, and we started Garrett Trucking at that time, just as as an LLC to protect liability, you know, in case there was ever a trucking accident. And then as that progressed along, we added another employee, and Randy had experience with some over the road trucking and things like that. And when we weren't in the field, you know, spring or fall, you know, at times it could get slow. So Randy suggested that we had a step deck to haul hay and to do some other things. Randy suggested that we could do some commercial trucking with this step deck. And his wife, Jackie, had grown up with her dad being an over the road trucker and an owner operator. So Randy and Jackie very much, kind of, you know, ramrodded that, you know, took the lead in that. And Jackie would find on different load boards on the internet, it started very organically. Jackie would find loads on load boards on the internet, and we would kind of run the I-35 corridor basically. And Randy would do that. Well, then the second employee, Quentin, saw that Randy, you know, Randy was doing good, and you know, Randy was making extra money doing this, and you know, we were paying Randy 25% of the load at that time, and so Randy went and both started doing that. So then we had two trucks over the road when we weren't in the field, and then along came, you know, and it was a good friend of mine, Steve Kilpack, and an agronomist we were working with at the time. He came to me with the plant food product, and you know, he had knowledge of it. He was using some of it, and we started to use it. And my agronomy experience or education was very limited at the time. That's a, it was the same year, 2016, that we put in the drip irrigation, and we actually put plant food through the irrigation. And we had such a wonderful experience and a yield gain in the trial from that. I knew it was a special product, but I didn't fully understand it. And then Steve, you know, Steve knowing about our trucking capability, things like that, you know, with two trucks, he said, you know, we could go to work for Feed Energy and we can purchase some tankers, go to work for Feed Energy and bring more plant food back. And what a great thing that would be for the farm. And we started then right after Thanksgiving 2016, we started hauling two loads a day and just bringing two loads a day back. And now we haul about 30 loads a day between Feed Energy. And we also do some hauling for Andersons with our tankers, things like that. And it just grew very organically from there. And, you know, if you do a good job and you have respect for people and things like that, it just seems like good things happen. And we very much pride ourselves on our service, and we're going to do what we say we're going to do. We don't cancel a load. We don't miss a load. That's very important to me, because you just have to offer that service if you're going to be successful in any business in life.
I totally agree. So, well, that's pretty interesting how, and you're right. I think telling your kids that, you know, there's going to be times where you think, we're not getting anywhere. And then, like you say, it almost explodes on you. It's like, how are you going to handle this? So I think probably the trucking business was a little bit that way too, wasn't it? We'll just go along, and then boom, it sort of explodes on you a little bit.
It is. The one advantage of trucking in that scenario over farming is if somebody wants to rent you 1,000 acres, you're going to take it on. You got to figure out the 1,000 acres. With the trucking, I will tell you that opportunity exists every day. And we turn down loads all the time because there's such a need for trucks in our country.
Yeah.
But we have the opportunity to be as busy as we want. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
But you're right. That opportunity in trucking exists every day. And with farming, when a chunk of land comes along, you have to decide if you can handle it all or not, because if you don't want to handle it all, somebody else will, you know. And so with trucks, I mean, Paul, there are brokers that call every day wanting loads of something hauled.
Well, we know there's definitely a lack of truckers around the country. I mean, that's, you know, that was apparent before the pandemic. The pandemic didn't help it. And a lot of the truckers are getting older, just like farmers. They're getting older, and the younger generation isn't necessarily wanting to become a trucker.
Absolutely. It's too hard to work. They want to, it doesn't seem like people, you know, they don't want to be gone from home. They don't want to work weekends. They don't want to do things like that. But you know, if you're ever going to get ahead in life, it's not going to happen 9 to 5.
I remember, when I started, back in the early 80s, mid 80s, I started as a CPA. And back then, during tax season, it was very common for us to work 80, 90 hour weeks, you know, and you did it for 8 or 10 weeks, and you just knew it was going to be that way. Now with the next generation coming up, and I don't want to sound like the old fogey here, but, if you ask them to work 55 hours a week for about 10 weeks, you know, it's like, oh, we can't do that. You know, it's like, Well, again, I don't want to sound like the old bogey, so let's move on. So, actually, let's go ahead and take a break for a sponsor message, and we'll come back and talk about some of the other entrepreneurial pursuits that you've done over your career.
How many years away is the long run for a farmer? 5 years? 10 years? Top producers like Hans Reinschi, a Blue Diamond farming company in Jessup, Iowa, know RoboAgri Finance shares his enduring vision for the future.
Whether it's building our grain site or if it's purchasing the next field, we're able to turn to Robo as a trusted partner to help us get financing to make those generational decisions.
With unmatched financial capacity, local relationship managers, and a global network of sector experts to offer market guidance, RoboAgri Finance provides enterprising farmers with a personalized approach to lending and financial services. Growing a better world together, RoboAgri Finance.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Top Producer Podcast. This is Paul Neef, your host. We're going to rejoin our conversation with Kelly Garrett from Northwestern Iowa. So, Kelly, we talked about the transportation and on sort of the KSX side with the feedstock or the agronomy product that you have. I think that's helped you start or get involved in extreme ag and so on. Go through that process. How did that happen and what is it? And let's talk about that for a little bit.
You bet. Yeah. Extreme ag, I'll tell you, it's exceeded my expectations about 50 times. It's an amazing thing. I'm fascinated every day by how far we've come. So in the fall of 15, we put in drip irrigation with Kurt Grimm of NutriDrip out of Hiawatha, Kansas. And then NutriDrip, and that's, it's Netafim drip irrigation. And Kurt and the Netafim folks we became acquainted with encouraged me to enter the NCGA yield contest. And, you know, it wasn't something that I'd really ever paid attention to, and I wasn't that excited about it. But we entered, you know, and then we, you know, again, you know, like I talked about, we put plant food through the drip irrigation. And had an amazing yield result. And we raised that first year in the contest yield. Our entry was like about 290 bushel per acre. And I really wanted to raise 300 bushel corn. And I took the sample, I sent it in, things like that. And then I kind of forgot about it because as usual, you feel like you're behind during harvest. And I didn't think anything would ever come of it. Well, then we won the state of Iowa. No-till drip irrigation. We were the first place entry in the state, and then Netafim and NutriDrip, and then of course Pioneer, because we won with a Pioneer hybrid. You know, Pioneer would pay for you to go to the Commodity Classic, which was in San Antonio that year, and you know, sometime in February of 17, and we I'm like, I didn't want to go, you know, and things like that, and my mom and my wife encouraged me to go. So then my middle son Colin and I went to San Antonio. We walked in the Commodity Classic and I was like, holy cow, this is a big deal. You know, it was a trade show I never really had paid attention to. You know, a lot of times in February we were calving cows and we had moved that calving date. So February wasn't as busy. And so, you know, we had the opportunity to go and then we go to the Netafim booth, and they had my picture up there with the yield. And I was just amazed that my picture was up on that wall, you know, and Kevin Matthews was up on that wall as well, things like that. And to me, Kevin was a celebrity because of the things he'd done, the yields he had. And, you know, I had seen him and heard him speak at Ag PhD at Hefty's in Baltic, South Dakota in July. You know, we had gone up there and I got to know Kevin at that show. And I tell you, Paul, I was hooked from that moment. And so then, you know, we entered NCGA every year, became friends with Kevin, you know, went back to the Commodity Classic. And then in 18, Brian and Darren Hefty were looking for more people to speak and to expand their field day in Baltic. And Kevin was instrumental in getting me involved. I was a farmer from Iowa and went up there and had a plot in their first step trials. And, you know, like I said, I already knew Kevin. I met Chad Henderson there, met Matt Miles, met Lee Lubers, you know, things like that, and got to be friends with them. And that was in 18. Well, then, you know, in 19, we started talking about forming a group to show what we're doing on our farms and just share them with other farmers. And, you know, it's kind of going to be a peer group, and farmers were going to pay to subscribe, and we would put up this website and put it together. And you know, it was going to be Kevin and I and Dan Lepkis from Illinois and Matt and Miles from Arkansas, Chad Henderson from Alabama, and Lee Lubers from South Dakota. And So we built a website, we're putting it together, and we needed someone to handle the social media aspect of something that, you know, I didn't even have a Facebook account at this time. And so Will Ostedt was a guy that we knew, and he lived in Los Angeles, and he worked for an advertising firm that promoted Netafim. So Kevin and I and Dan knew Will because of the Netafim promotional videos that Will had produced about us, you know, to promote Netafim drip irrigation in the Midwest. So we asked Will to be involved. He was fascinated by the idea, and we all thought we would get, you know, a whole bunch of we thought we'd get a whole bunch of subscribers when we would start. And Will said, it will take a while to get the subscribers. You'll get sponsors first. Yeah. And sponsors, who in the heck is ever going to want to sponsor this? And he said, you just wait, you'll be surprised. And then, you know, approximately March 1st of 2020, we launched Extreme Ag at the Commodity Classic. And we thought we'd have 100 people sign up. Nobody signed up. And I was like, holy cow, and I was disappointed. But we did come out of there with about a half a dozen sponsors. And so Will has been right from the beginning, and I just don't doubt him anymore. And, you know, then Will worked with Extreme Ag through his agency for about a year or so. And Will was kind of tired of corporate life. And he came and he said, tell you what, I want to leave the agency. I want to work full time with you guys. And he was a partner in this firm. And you want to talk about somebody taking a shot at Extreme Ag in the early days, or a shot on Extreme Ag. Will gave up his partnership, gave up his shares. And the only thing he wanted to do, he wanted to leave with Extreme Ag. And so you could tell how much he believed in us from that point. And so he did. And now Will's still with us today. And, you know, Dan has left to go on to other things. And now Temple Rhodes of Maryland is very much involved. Johnny Varel of Tennessee is very much involved. Will still handles all the social media content. Now Shelly Mayle is now the CEO of Extreme Ag. She lives in Pennsylvania because we've grown enough that early on, Will handled everything. Well, now we have hired Shelly to handle the business side. Will handles the content side. And now we've even launched our own TV program. And on Tuesday, episode 5 came out. You know, we're obviously filming this here on a Thursday. On two days ago, episode 5 came out. And we have a cameraman that travels around and shoots that. And then Will handles, you know, Will helps him with the editing and has, you know, control over that. And now we have about 30 sponsors and we have about 300 subscribers, Paul. It's an amazing thing to me how this organization has grown. But, you know, all of these guys in Extreme Ag, Chad, Matt, Temple, Johnny, Kevin, Lee, they've become like my brothers. And it's my Extreme Ag family. And it's a wonderful thing. I'm very proud of it. I have a lot of pride in it. And we just want to help farmers with their ROI. That's what it's all about. It really is. It's a peer group. And, you know, and we do have these sponsors and they pay us to do the trials and the promotion. But we do not promote a product that we don't use on our farms. Right. We'll use trials and things like that. The thing that we are most sensitive about, or that we take the most credit, we won't say something that's not true. We will never promote anything that we don't believe in, because first and foremost, we're to help farmers.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Now, I'm just curious on the drip tape. Are you still using drip tape, or has the design of putting the feedstock into it? Or I'm just curious, because I've seen drip tape for like hemp farms and, you know, higher value crops where you use drip tape. And I guess I've seen some others on corn and soybeans, but I'm just curious, are you still using it and so on and so forth?
Yes. We started with 78 acres there in 2016. Now we've expanded to about 370. And here recently, with a couple new land purchases we have, I can see in the near future that I would say there's a very good chance we'll double that acreage. And, you know, we'll get up to about 700 acres because of land that we've purchased here around my house, you know, very close to our shop where the main well is, things like that. And we do have enough water in our well, and we have some other surface water that it would be very easy for us to expand. So yeah, we still use drip tape. It's a great product. And you're right, it's primarily used in high value crops. But, you know, an acre of drip tape, Paul, is about, let's say, $2,500 in my country because of the elevation change, things like that. Well, an acre of land here is about $10,000. So drip tape is a fourth the price of land. And when, you know, everybody wants to make more money, Paul, and their mindset is to do that, they need more acres. Well, no, what we really need is more bushels.
Right.
And I will tell you that I can very reliably probably add 33% of a corn crop and at least that of a bean crop, if not more like 40, 45% to a bean crop with the drip tape. So when you look at it from an investment standpoint, and you want to make more money, the drip tape is cheaper than land to produce these extra bushels that we're talking about. And then when you take rain out of the equation and the control we have, a lot better security. So the drip tape to me is a great investment versus land. Now we bought a couple farms this year. So I'm not saying that I don't ever want to buy land, but from an investment standpoint, when we're talking about high value crops, the very easy math to show how drip tape is a good investment.
So for the listeners out there maybe that aren't familiar with it, how deep do you put it down? How long does it last? And then as far as, are you only pumping water through it or are you pumping chemicals through it? Just for the listeners out there, just go through those details.
Sure, that's a great question. Our drip tape is 16 inches deep. We put it that deep because when we get up on the side hills and things like that, I worry about some erosion. That's what I worried about early on when we put it in. That has not been an issue. We have had a few exposed tapes because of a bad rainstorm or something like that. But, you know, we use a scraper and we haul dirt back up there. That has not been a problem at all. In other places of the country, they maybe will only go 8 to 10 inches deep. And you could consider it a better fertility tool if you would go a little shallower in some soils. But I'll tell you, in my soils, Paul, that tape being 16 inches deep, if there's a skip in the field and you turn that water on, it'll come to the surface in just a couple hours. The water in our soil does wick that water up very easily. You get into some sandier soil, things like that, and they have concerns about the water going straight down. In our Iowa soil, that doesn't happen. So there, what we have is a drip tape, which is basically a 7/8 inch water line, and they're every 60 inches across the field. So basically they're every other row. So they're 60 inches across the field, and then they're 16 inches deep. And we very rarely turn it on without plant food in it. And we will also put other fertility in it as well, Paul. The reason we always have plant food in it is my water is hard, has a lot of bicarbonates in it that ties up fertility, it's a high pH water, things like that. And after we started investigating and educating ourselves on water, Paul, I've never met anybody with good water, to tell you the truth. And our water, you know, a producer thinks water is water. It's not. And there's a lot of low-hanging fruit to improve your yields or the efficacy of your chemicals if you look at your water. So we do not turn irrigation on out of this well without having plant food in it to amend the water, just like we're trying to amend the soil. There are a couple other places, Paul, where we use surface water for irrigation. That water's great. But that well water is very hard and it's not a great fertility source without amending it in some way.
Okay. How deep do you have to dig your well then?
This well is 180 foot deep and will produce 1,200 to 1,500 gallon a minute if you open it wide up.
I hate you. I drilled a well in Southwest Missouri. I think I had to go 1,200 feet to get 1,600 gallons per minute. So I hate you. So
we're blessed with a lot of water here. You're right.
Yeah. So, well, and then also, I think you also have a business called Integrated Ag Solution. What is that business?
So in the spring of 2020, you know, we opened Extreme Ag, and then, there was an agronomist that was here a lot from, he was actually worked at Nutrien at the time. His name is Mike Evans. And Mike and I got to be very close relationship. And Mike was interested with the high yields we're trying to attain and things like that. And in the spring of 2020, when we're putting in the first trials with Extreme Ag on my farm, it became obvious that there was a lot of practices and a lot of products that weren't available here because they were a little bit, they were progressive and they're outside the box. You know, it's the first time I ever dealt with companies like Nature's, AgroLiquid, Concept AgriTech, Teva, you know, to just to name a few, and you know, the list goes on and on about these, you know, these sponsors of Extreme Ag that we were using their products. And I told Mike, I said, Mike, there is room or an opportunity for a business here that would sell and service the products that sponsor Extreme Ag, because no one else here is doing this. You know, I hadn't even heard of some of these companies, and they had wonderful products, wonderful ideas. And so at, you know, we didn't even get to the first harvest with these trials, Paul, but you could see, you could just walk in the field and you could see the difference. You know, it was the first time I'd ever used a PGR, plant growth regulator, and I'd never even heard of it before. And so we went through that, and Mike, much like Will, was kind of tired of corporate life. Mike resigned from Nutrien in August, and on September 1st of 2020, we opened Integrated Ag Solutions. And like I said, it sells and services the products that sponsor Extreme Ag. And we've had it, we've added a few other products now that we believe in here locally that that aren't necessarily involved in Extreme Ag, but that would be very much the mission statement there. And we now, I'm sitting in an office that we just moved into 2 months ago, and we build an 80 by 200 warehouse with a liquid facility in it. And then this, you know, our seed is in here and the fertility is in here. And Integrated Ag last year did about $7 million in business. We've added a third partner, Mike Wingrove. He's also formerly of Nutrien. And so Mike Evans and Mike Wingrove and I are partners in Integrated Ag. And it's a growing business, because there is a certain amount of farmers out there that are progressive and that do want to move forward and try new things and to continue to get better. And that would be our marketplace, I guess. That's where Integrated Ag lives, is with those kind of producers. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, great. And then finally, you have a company called GLC Beef.
Yes. So, you know, in the effort to make more money out of the cattle herd and to move, you know, go into the retail market, if you will, my sons and I decided to start GLC Beef, and it is a farm to table meat business. We built a store in our small hometown of Dow City, Iowa. The population is about 350 people, but basically we needed a big freezer. So we have a very nice store in there that the boys and some of our employees here on the farm built. You know, it's about a 2,000 square foot building with a 600 square foot freezer. And we worked with the USDA and we worked with our processor, and we can make an Angus claim, and we're all natural, no hormones, no antibiotics. And every piece of beef or meat that comes out of GLC Beef is a black Angus heifer that's been born and raised on our farm. We only process heifers for a couple of reasons. Number one, we sell the steers as yearlings, and obviously everybody knows steers bring more money than heifers. Yeah. So we think, you know, it's a value add to the lower priced commodity. You know, we're adding value to the heifers. And then the heifer is easier to make fat. So it's easier to have a better grade. You know, we want to have, would be great if everything would grade prime. You know, obviously it doesn't, but it's easier to make everything, it's easier to make the heifer grade better because it's easier to make the heifer fat. And so everything that goes through GLC Beef is a black Angus all natural heifer that we've raised here. We process 12 to 15 head per month at Paradise Locker in Trimble, Missouri, which is down there between St. Joe and Kansas City. And we haul them down there with our own semis, and then we go get them with our reefer, and we have a new meat shipment come in every month. We now have our own line of beef sticks, you know, to use up some of the hamburger for different things. And now we just, I'm excited because yesterday we closed the deal, and we now have our line of meat sticks in 50 convenience stores around Western Iowa.
Okay. Now, is your market mostly people come to the store, or is a lot of it mail or internet related? Or I was just curious on that.
Paul, it has surprised me. I very much believed it would be a very internet based business. And yesterday, actually, someone from Alabama did order a half a beef, which that's a big sale to ship over the internet, ship through UPS or whatever however they'll do it. But the walk-in business has been surprising to me. You know, Jefferson, Iowa is about 80 miles east, and we have a couple people that will reliably come out of Jefferson to come over, and because they want that home-raised product, and we're really proud of the product that we have. So it has been a little less internet, higher percentage of walk-in than I thought it would be. But the business is growing, And it's something we're really excited about.
Good, good. Well, I think, Kelly, you and I could probably talk for another half hour, but I probably need to come to an end here. We try to keep it less than an hour. So, and I always have my four key questions I ask at the end. So let's do that. And likely I'll probably have you on another podcast later on just to catch up. But who is your mentor? Have you had any mentors in this process along the way?
I have. My dad, of course, growing up, my dad is my hero. He's still around today. He comes out now. He's over there with my sons now, checking the cows and things like that. And my dad, like when we talk about offering that service with the trucks, you have to do what you say you're going to do, and you have to keep your word. And that work ethic and that quality, that expectation to have quality from my dad. My uncle Ace is married to my mom's sister. He's like my second dad. He owns the he did own the convenience store in town, and he was ready to slow down. We purchased that as of July 1st. And Ace and my dad would be my two biggest mentors, that I've had the longest. There's been other people along the way. There's a man named John Nielsen, and he was my principal growing up. He retired, and then I hired him to run the grain cart during harvest. And talking to John about business and other things, it was nice to always have John's mindset or perspective on things, because it wasn't agricultural based. So it was an outside perspective, and I really learned a lot from John. The fourth one, the final one I list is Tom Trotter, who would be my dad's best friend. And Tom, graduated from Nebraska. He's retired now, but he had an animal nutrition, animal science degree out of Nebraska, and he worked at the local co-op here and was the feed specialist. And talking to Tom about business, and then talking to Tom about the rations that we feed to the cattle and the different things we do, the four of them would really be the people that I would consider my mentors. And I'm lucky to have them.
Good, good, good. Now, I'm just mentally keeping track of all the time you spend, and I'm just curious, do you have any time for any hobbies?
Amber's still a runner, and I very much, I had some health problems a couple of years ago. I've got those corrected, and because of that, I've got very much into fitness. So I like to lift weights, like to run, and recently Amber and I have started playing pickleball with some friends. So we play pickleball a couple times a week. Amber and I are very much foodies. We enjoy going out to eat, trying different restaurants, things like that. In January, we took the whole family and went skiing. We like to travel. And I would tell you that extreme ag is a hobby that I like. The different speaking engagements we have around the country and the people we meet, that would probably be one of the things I would list as my biggest love. I know that's still farming related, but it is a hobby of mine to travel with Extreme Ag and to meet new people.
Exactly. Well, it's like one of my hobbies is doing my blog, and actually doing this podcast is sort of a hobby. And I am also a pickleball player. I try to play, I can probably get in 5 or 6 rounds a week. Now, I was playing Tuesday night and not pulled, but tweaked my calf muscle. So I decided not to play yesterday. And that's good, because now it's back to normal, I think. So is there anything that keeps you up at night?
Right now it's okay. I sometimes worry. I used to worry when I did the marketing myself, and now a friend of yours, I believe Jared Creed, handles the marketing for us. So that takes a lot of pressure off my shoulders. Sometimes the weather, this winter, the way the weather was at different times, I stayed up at night because, you've committed to all those people to get that plant food spray and to get across all those acres. That is the most recent thing that has kept me up. I would say just the weather keeps me up at night right now. I used to worry about labor and things like that because it's hard to find enough people. We now, of the 83 employees, 23 of them are South African H2A guys. Yep. So the labor piece is something that I feel like we have at least solved here temporarily. That's always a concern. But right now, I would just say it's the weather at different times, because I'm a control freak and obviously can't control that.
Yeah. My mother used to worry about that, and I asked her once, being a smart aleck teenager, I go, "Mom, can you control the weather?" And she goes, "No." Then I go, "Don't worry about it. You know, so if you can't control it, don't worry about it." But
I try my best, Paul, but I'm not always successful.
I know. And then finally, what's your definition of success in farming?
You know, it would be, you know, not everyone would aspires to have an operation as large as ours, and that's okay. And so to me, that is not the measure of success. The measure of success is to for me, is to be happy working with my sons every day. My dad is here every day. Some of our employees are people that I grew up around and things like that. And it's to be happy. It's to be happy and to take care of your family. Yeah. That's the definition of success.
I totally agree. Well, again, Kelly, this has been great. I think I will definitely have to have a follow-up conversation, another podcast with you, and maybe another few months down the road.
I'd be happy to be on anytime, Paul.
Okay. Again, this is the Top Producer Podcast, and this is Paul Neifer, your host, signing off.